Hello, everyone. My name is OG, and here with me is Ontario. We have a colleague of ours here, Wing Commander Maxwell Ikara. So Tyre and I are from Army War College Nigeria. We're members of faculty, and Maxwell is a member of faculty from the Air Force War College. So earlier this year, we started on a game, which is the Central Shield. And we're there to be different. We want to revolutionize the military war gaming in Nigeria. We will follow this agenda. I think I will take the background, the traditional wargaming. I will talk about two of our approaches. Tyre will talk about the other two. And he will draw very, very important lessons. And of course, we'll have a pathway for the future of wargaming in professional military education. It's important to set the background as to where we are coming from, especially the terrain, you know, the geographical setting, because we are focusing highly on influence. And like Graham said, the human terrain becomes very, very essential in today's security landscape. So focusing on how conflict dynamics, you know, influence operations and interagency cooperation and coordination shape decision-making in stabilization efforts. So now we're talking about the central belt. You know, it's the north central region in Nigeria, and it's very unique to our operations and then to Nigeria itself, because it's a transition zone between the north and the south. And if you all know Nigeria well, the south is predominantly Christian and the north predominantly Muslim. But the middle belt, which is the north central region, is a mix of religion, ethnic, and, you know, different cultural histories. So it begins to pose some form of challenges, some form of skirmishes and conflicts, but that area remains very, very essential, you know, to the economic stability of Nigeria in terms of food production. And over the years, we've been having series of skirmishes within that area, and then we decided again that will cater for that area using influence. However, for the purpose of our game, we will go beyond influence to look at the other dynamics that we talk about most times but do not actually play out. And then we'll go back to talking about campaigning, talking about the influence itself, the weak use of red cell, red team, and also a hybrid adjudication procedure. So we're talking about campaigning, and we've realized over time, and even when our game started, that most war games do not look at the whole, you know, thread of campaigning. It's always a single vignette immediately, and you try to use it to solve problems, which we've seen that no, it doesn't work, because we also work within, you know, the operational level, because our game cuts across the tactical, operational, and the strategic level, understanding that the operational level planning process is key to the outcomes of most of our decisions. So we decided to have a game that cuts across all those three layers. And we went into the influence aspect of it to see that most of us do not understand the importance of influence, especially in today's complex security landscape that has a lot to do with the people. And lastly, looking at red cells, well, maybe from my experience and what we have done, we started with under-resourcing the red team, not intentionally, but because we put them secondary, and then we realized that under-resourcing them did not allow a proper critique of the whole game process. So we tried to develop a better way for red teaming. So now the first approach, what we did differently in our game, is to adopt a campaigning mindset, you know, that goes away from the traditional single vignette into a series of vignettes, series of scenarios that helps us to see threats and risk across a series of activities. And that helps us for force projection testing, gives us the ability to grapple with logistics, political timelines, and then the regional diplomacy. across a series of combat operations. It helps in the areas of campaign phasing. Like I said, we're from the Army War College, we're a member of faculty, and most of our takeaways here that we'll be giving to you is what we've gotten as feedbacks from our participants and as such, and what we also saw during the process. So what it brings to the table is it gives us more realism. It lets us to see that a single decisive battle cannot give us, you know, the detailed insights we are looking for, but rather a cumulative effect of sequence operations, you know, will help under a sustained political will. And then we've seen that participants have learned that short-term tactical wins, when misaligned with our strategic goals, will lead to long-term strategic risk. And of course, no one wants that in their planning for their operations. And the second will be integrating the influence dimension itself. And then the central shield try to bring its influence, you know, into the cognitive, into the virtual, as well as the physical domain, letting us see that the, you know, people-centric effect remains very, very critical in whatever we do, in the decisions that we take. And then we have three pillars we're working with, which is the media and information operations, the strategic communications, as well as the people reaction. And the people reaction here becomes very, very essential. And what we try to do is we notice that one of the reasons why people run away from the influence is because intangible things such an influence are actually difficult to measure in such our games. And then with the help of Graham over the couple of months, we've used the influence hand gaming workbook to create, to develop for our specific use an influence tracker that can actually mark what people do based on based on what we bring to the table as the military, based on how we influence them either positively or negatively. And we've seen over time that what has happened is we've been able to gain trust with a series of our activities and how we've marked our interest, our influence, leading to getting the interest that we want in our games. I will call on Tayo now to continue with the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Uji. I'll move a little quick so I don't get Graham's other side when it comes to time management. So quickly to the third approach that we used, which essentially was trying to empower the red sail and red teaming process. So what we noticed is most of our war games, we had a scripted red sail. So essentially, that didn't allow us to include hybrid threats. I mean, in the complex environment that we are now, cyber disruptions and all that aspects that escalate into regional crises and even cross-border activities. So what we did was incorporate hybrid threats, bringing in criminal syndicates, insurgents, and even foreign sponsors into the, to form that multi-layer challenge for the Red Cell. Essentially, we also tried to incorporate cyber disruptions, proxy, support to test the blue cell beyond our conventional battle plans, and as well as regional escalations, because we have dynamics where we, of course, we're part of the multinational joint task force, the ECOWAS standby force, and of course the African Union standby force. And what this did was it prepared our participants for complex and multi-actor, multi-domain environments, of course, with the complex nature of contemporary operations. Now to the fourth one, which essentially was us trying to bring in a hybrid adjudication aspect, because the war game essentially was more of course of action based, because we wanted to use that operational level bridge of tactical and strategic outcomes. So what we did was to bring in, instead of the rigid course of action adjudication process, we brought in sort of a hybrid adjudication which combined deterministic rules with the combat resolution tables with probabilistic tools using the dice. One of the pushbacks we had during the Matrix War Games was our participants felt using the dice was oversimplifying complex outcomes. So we tried to bring also expert judgment into it, where the Army War College had research fellows who were experts in certain regions to come in and give us that expert adjudication and political outcomes when it came to the frameworks of the regions. And what this did was give us credibility, transparency, and flexibility And also we're able to see how outcomes depended both on quantifiable factors and qualitative factors in uncertain dynamics. Of course, politics, influence, and psychology played a big role. Now, I'll quickly go to the lessons from Central Shield. And first, I'll talk about how the campaign-level thinking that OG discussed was really brought out, and we're able to see how short-term tactical wins couldn't really create long-term strategic outcomes. Of course, we talked about winning. There's that aspect of winning the battle and losing the peace, which is something that we looked at considerably to ensure that we're able to align campaign alignments with sustainable planning and, of course, with strategic outcomes. Another thing was the multi-domain integration based on the influence, regional influence that Nigeria had. Of course, we're able to realize that perception and legitimacy could overturn battle field progress. So, of course, making influence had to be essential. One of the ways we did this was we sort of had sentiment level matrix in each region. And with the subject matter experts and research fellows, we're able to get data on the sentiment level based on operations that we conduct on winning the hearts and mind, and of course, government operations to see how the sentiment level was, and that informed how our operations were carried out. Of course, adaptive red cell and effective red teaming showed us how we could build resilience, where we're able to see an adapted adversarial mindset where we made the adversary more adaptive to other aspects of contemporary environment, and at the same time, the red team was thinking more on the adversary level. Of course, that was able to test our biases and, of course, bring out adaptive aspects to our own operations. Now, we also looked at less emphasis on kinetic and more realism. One of the things we noticed was whenever there's a challenge, we're quickly throwing kinetic activities into that challenge. That really didn't bring out the outcomes that we needed. So one of the things was de-emphasize kinetic means and go more on the non-kinetic aspects. Of course, we looked at aspects of disruption of governance, loss of legitimacy, collapse of alliances, and of course, media fallout from disinformation and misinformation. Those were areas where we concentrated on to get the sentiment level of different areas and different regions. And of course, that also underscored that sometimes restraints, influence, or shaping the environment yielded greater advantage rather than offensive operation when we de-escalated aspects of kinetic operation. And more important is the education and doctrinal impact. The Army War College and the other services war colleges act as think tanks, not just to educate operational and strategic level leaders, but also to inform higher headquarters on how tactics, techniques, and procedures can be modified. And that Central Shield actually helped as a doctrinal lab exploring hybrid, joint, combined, integrated, and coalition operations, as well as campaigning under constraints to refine our doctrines and our tactics, techniques, and procedures. Of course, it also reinforced our Wargaming Center as a professional practice that blends analytical, educational, and experiential learning, because it wasn't just about the participants, but it was also on refining our doctrines and informing campaigns and higher headquarters on how to make better decisions. Now, lastly, I'll just talk about how the Central Shield essentially formed the bridgehead for us when it came to wargaming and exercising our doctrinal laboratory into ensuring that we're able to explore complex and multidimensional scenarios and campaigning under constraints. It's also reinforced how we're able to blend analytical, educational, and experiential learning into better decision-making and better results in the field. Generally, we're looking at conflicts as not just decided by tactical victories alone, but then we're trying to put in blend military, political, and influence efforts against adaptable adversaries in the complex environment. And of course, using hybrid adjudication showed that we could have rigorous and yet realistic outcomes and ensure that effective wargaming blends quantifiable factors with qualitative dynamics through hybrid methodologies. Now, that brings me to the end of our presentation. Thank you, and then we'll answer any questions later. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you.